ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Tuesday. Corbin Middlemass alongside the Footscray heartthrob, Bob Murphy. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Corbin. Good morning to you. Nice to be in your company.
Here we are, round 18's done. Six games left for each of the 18 clubs.
Far out.
Or six games in the regular season. Obviously, yep. For more than half of those, mm-hmm. 10 of them, they'll be going on into the spring and the postseason, and off we go.
Jockeying for positions.
Finals footy. So on the docket today.
Okay.
Pies, Suns, Cats, Dons, Blues.
Like it.
Feels like Dons and Blues are regular regular fixtures.
Yeah, they're not specials on the menu.
No.
They're locked in.
Yeah, they're your Monday favourites.
Yeah.
The carnivorous footy shows that we're here to...
The salad dodgers on a Monday night.
That's what we're all about. So if you're new to joining us on a Tuesday, welcome aboard. Don't call it a comeback. We've been here all year on ABC.
Well, welcome, yes. But you've missed quite a bit.
Quite a bit of good stuff. Every Tuesday,
some swill.
All the hot takes from the Monday night footy shows, we pick out the best stuff and we get Bob Murphy to react to it on a Tuesday. All right, Monday nights on AFL 360 on Fox Footy is Coach's Night. Mm-hmm. There's always something out of this, and last night it was Craig McRae who provided it when he was quizzed about this long-standing philosophy that Collingwood don't necessarily want to go to the draft.
You are famously quoted as saying, give me players, not picks. Is that a true reflection of your philosophy?
Oh, well, Jared, I honestly haven't spoken about this ever. I've just sort of let it be out there for the narrative of being written about me or about that quote. But that was never my agenda or my philosophy. That was something that was happening in the background through a trade period that, you know, funnily enough, Justin Lepage asked me to say that publicly so then it would support a trade. But that's so far from my... know, philosophy or my want. If anything, I'm probably more balanced and struggle to have one philosophy around trading because I think you can't sit in one box. If you just go straight to the trade period and free agency, then you're leaving other things behind. I think you've got to be really balanced and somewhat even meet every trade period with its own or its own the draft with its own merits. You know, like this is the first time as coach that I've been coaching for Collingwood 5 years that we've got all our draft picks. And we've got a healthy salary cap that we're not paying players from other clubs, and we've got money to spend. It just hasn't been the story in my time. So there's an excitement with that.
So Justin Lepage, by the way, is not just a premiership teammate of Craig McRae. He's also the current general manager of list and talent strategy at the Collingwood mm-hmm. Football Club. Did he just go straight under the bus there?
Certainly on first look, it sounds like, oh, I didn't say that. That was, I was given the script by list manager Justin Lepage. So am I reading that right or am I hearing that right that for that particular moment in that particular trade week, that's what Justin Lepage wanted? Gimme players, not picks. And then that has become coined as this sort of broader philosophy that Collingwood up until now have just sort of let sit there but never really believed. Is that what...
Or maybe they've just changed their philosophy on the run.
Yeah.
Do you want the quote? So this was September 2024. So by the way, people are allowed to change their mind,
which
is fine. We're not saying they can't, but I think what Craig McRae is essentially hinting at is that was never my philosophy. I never had the philosophy that was players over picks. This is what he told SEN back on September of 2024. That's true. I'm a coach that wants to bring players in. I said that at the end of the season, it's hard, such a hard market fishing from the same pond, but I don't want picks. I say to the list management, I don't want picks, I want players. Let's bring players in and make us better, not just any players, but players that are going to make us better. That makes sense. We're somewhat deliberate on that, and we think that Harry can make us better, and we're hoping that we can put a case to him that he thinks Collingwood is the place for him. So this was around Harry Perryman.
Yep.
The interesting part about this is Harry Perryman was an unrestricted free agent. So that particular quote where he talks about the fact that he wanted players, not picks, was essentially about a guy that was coming through free agency. So they wouldn't have necessarily had to give anything up for him.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like that was at that particular time that was Craig McRae telling the list management team, this is what I want anyway. So I think there's ends up being maybe semantics over, you know, things do change over time and their situation is different.
He went on to say the most optimal, you know, trade period would essentially look like taking your first round pick to the draft, so a top 18 pick, and then moving the rest and getting established players mm-hmm. in, which is probably about, most people would agree with that, wouldn't it? Get an elite, you know, top talent in and then, yeah, make do with the rest of it as opposed to fishing in the second, third, fourth round.
Well, getting rid of early picks is, this is, an obvious thing to say, but that's what makes clubs and supporters and everyone and more nervy, because the cost, it can change the future of your footy club. I am very interested by how Collingwood approach this end of season trade period and just what's going on under the surface.
What do you reckon is happening?
Oh, I just think there's just a gut feel.
Yep.
Gut feel of, we know about the Lachie Neale, the interest there. I just feel like they're a club that has a magnetic pull of players and that they are hungry to get them in. So I think there's a lot happening that we haven't heard about yet. That would be my gut feel.
Okay. The name that's obviously always present is Zach Butters.
Mm-hmm.
And as to where they sit in that particular conversation, it feels like if you put your finger in the wind, a lot of the media reporting is, the Dogs are so far in front. He's definitely going to the Dogs. I'm not so sure I subscribe to
that. No, I'm still not so set on that. And now it's, Ben King is, his name is bandied about, and, the talk that he might want to go to Hawthorn. Well, Collingwood need a key forward.
Yep.
That would be where my antenna starts to wonder. Yeah. All subjective, but
I know that football's not a sport like basketball where you can just, pair up two or three guys and all of a sudden they're a different team. But if you put Butters and Dacos on the same team, then, that's all of a sudden they're cooking straight away, aren't they?
Footy isn't like basketball, but I feel like two genuine gun midfielders carries even, it's more than the sum of its parts.
Yep.
That really does rule out tagging. Or it makes it so difficult.
Yeah, and there'll be people screaming at their podcast today saying, well, isn't it the same thing with Bont? If all of a sudden you put Bont and Butters together and sure. I mean, the Dogs have had...
Totally, but they already have that with Ed Richards.
They've had the overwhelming midfield dominance and it hasn't necessarily translated
into... No, that's right. No, but if Bonty's not there, Ed Richards, that's... he's a gun, Ed Richards, but he'd get a lot more attention.
Mm. All right. Damien Hardwick. This was a fascinating quote post-game after the loss to Adelaide where he essentially said, look, we're mathematically just about out of it. Yeah, season's done. It's all about the focus on how we're going to build through these last 6 weeks to set ourselves up for 2027. Check the ladder, Bob, and how it sits at the moment. And the Suns are a game and percentage out. So one game and percentage outside of the top 10 as it sits currently with six to play. Naturally, that created a fair bit of conversation last night across all four shows and three networks, but in particular on the couch last night with the greatest of all time, Lee Matthews, who had this to say last night with Nathan Buckley.
We've all said something which we hadn't said in those post-match press conferences. I mean, post-game, it's really emotional. This might be 20, 30 minutes after the game. And the emotion sometimes can get you a little bit and you just sort of put and the words pop out. But I don't think, because really a coach has to be a supreme optimist. Against all logic, you've got to be optimistic. And I'm surprised, actually, that Damien probably, as I say, the word just flowed out a little bit because they'd had a bad day at the footy.
He had the 12-hour rule, Lee. That was at Richmond, it was the 12-hour rule. It was sleep on it and then come back. And don't worry, he'd said that to me a lot.
Well, that's private, but it's in the public.
It's the 12-hour rule that public stuff. Probably didn't get the 12 hours from the final siren to the press conference back, like it'd be 12 minutes.
Your words rang in my ears throughout my tenure at Collingwood, and that is that whatever you say publicly, imagine that you're saying directly to your players.
Yep.
And I wouldn't imagine that Dimmer would say to his group, well, that's the year done. So I think he misspoke. He didn't intend to say it. I think he intended to say what he said after that, which was, we don't deserve to play.
It came across as hurt, I reckon, more than anything.
Well, potentially, but
I'm disappointed.
What's he playing at, Damien Hardwick?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's very unusual, isn't it, to hear the coach say it that explicitly?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, that's, the hope and... I mean, I love footy cliches because I think some of them are deserving of a closer inspection. And there's always next week is one of those, you've heard it a million times. It is the inherent optimism of footy clubs. Mm. And Hardwick has kind of... He's gone the other way with all of that. So the way they're going... There must be serious problems in there. So The way I heard it was he's saying that we're not contenders, and other people are hearing it. Well, we can't make it. So maybe it's one and the same thing. Mm. So I think he clearly understands mathematically it could turn around, but the way they're going, they're no chance. Even if they do make it, to make a dent in the final, and he's there to win them. That's looking through rose-colored glasses. Say, that's really being
the other lens is he's run up the white flag.
Yeah, which.
And if you're the, you know, Craig Hutchison last night on the Agenda Setters, for example, saying, you know, what about this is a team that's largely AFL funded. You know, Nick Riewoldt asked the question, you know, who's going to go this week? So they're playing the Western Bulldogs on Sunday, and you got the coach coming out basically saying, it's a wrap, don't worry about it, it's all about building for next year. Mm-hmm. And so what have they got, these six practice matches at the end of the year to propel into 2027? At the end of the day, like, they're trying to sell tickets and sell hope on the Gold Coast, and Dimmer's basically saying, 6 weeks to go, don't worry about it. We've packed up.
See, I mean, Damien Hardwick, his style, you know, he's like all of us. None of us are perfect, but his style has got a few warts on it. You know, he's made a few blues over the years. Running up the white flag, not one of them. But when you say those sort of things, there are players who aren't as combative and aren't as driven. And so they might be like, oh,
yeah,
to take the edge off as well when things are going.
So this is the part I'm fascinated by. Is what would the psychology be of the playing group hearing that? So is it a way of almost like, is it reverse psychology? Is he trying to take the pressure off them so they come out and play free this week? Because I'm more with you. I think, is there another aspect of this where players go, oh, well, we're done. Even Dimmer thinks we're done. Don't worry about it. It's sort of, why would I, you know, you could argue they're not doing that anyway. They're 18th for points against or whatever since round 11. But is there an element here where you see what it looks like for Essendon, where, you know, all hopes have evaporated? Is there a chance that becomes the Suns in the last 6 weeks for a team that, if you squinted at the start of the year, you thought there might be a premiership team there?
Yeah, because one of the scenarios is that it seeps in and you don't talk about it. You can't talk about it. But there's this like, okay, well, is the coach, like, where are we at now? We're falling down the bottom. And the added thing of, does he even want to be here?
Yeah.
Does he want to be here? What about?
Yeah,
that's where things can get really ugly. So if they have an aberration on the, you know, when they get belted on the weekend, there is a recipe for why that might happen.
Yeah, I wonder how the Western Bulldogs feel rolling up playing a team like that this week. I think there was that stat during the round where the Dogs have always found themselves up against the caretaker coach in recent times, this unusual amount of times in recent years. This is kind of another weird example where they roll in and play in a team where the coach has said something that you never hear a senior coach say the week before, that the Dogs are seventh, they should go there and beat the Suns because everyone's doing that at the moment. And yet there's this weird backdrop to Sunday's fixture now, which is, are they going to come out breathing fire or are they going to be half asleep?
Well, I'm not inside the four walls, but I can easily imagine Luke Beveridge standing in front of them saying, and actually playing it and saying, that is garbage. If you think that's what we're about to see on the weekend, don't bother showing up because it'll be at the other end.
The other problem that Damien Hardwick had on the weekend was with the Adelaide Oval crowd. It's not the first time that we've seen that this year, where a senior coach, Chris Scott, did it earlier in the year, and now Damien Hardwick's had a spat with a member of the crowd on the way out onto the ground. So at Adelaide Oval, one of the coach's boxes, you have to go through the crowd to make your way out, and he stopped and had a few words and obviously referenced it in his post-match press conference where he talked about, you know, they're the kind of people that live in their mum's basement and everything else. Well, Caroline Wilson had some further details on that last night on the Agenda Setters on Channel 7.
So the AFL have gone to the Adelaide Oval again today. The issue is with the Port Adelaide coaches race, not the Adelaide one. So it's going to be incredibly costly to fix, and no one is of a mind to fix it. And you know who's got to get better? Both those coaches. Well,
there you go. So she's put it at the feet of the coaches to get better. Do you know what I heard there? And maybe this is too simplistic and someone will tell me why it can't happen. So the issue is with the Port Adelaide race and not the Adelaide race. So my understanding is, and yeah, living in two team towns, and you've done plenty of that, Bob, obviously, with your role with the Dockers. Generally what will happen is, the home team, Port Adelaide, will have their coach's box that their coach loves to use, and it leads to their change rooms or whatever it turns out to be. And the Adelaide Crows have their coach's box on the other side. And then what happens is when Adelaide play a home game against visiting team, the visiting team gets the Port box, and likewise, when Port plays a home game, the visiting team will get the Adelaide box. Is it not too simplistic to suggest, as a way to solve this entire issue, is that the coach that has to walk through the crowd is the home team? So the Adelaide and the Port Adelaide coach sit in the same box, right, for every home game. Mm-hmm. Then when they play each other, if it's an Adelaide home game, the Adelaide coach uses that box. Yeah. He walks through the crowd, which is largely Adelaide or Port Adelaide fans, his mm-hmm. own team. And the visiting coach uses the other box, which has the protection where they don't have to walk through
Look,
the crowd.
That does make a lot of sense, but you are also working off the basis that supporters encourage their own coach. So it might be cutting off your nose to spite your face. But also, like, look, I've never coached, and I imagine they'd have some pretty intense things said at them. But the more you go back at them, the more engagement you get. So if I was another coach, I'd almost be a bit like, Damien, don't. Chris Scott, don't.
Mm.
Just ignore it. Just walk. Just get on the field. Do your job.
There is a different... Chris Scott's spoken about this all, right throughout his career, but there is a different vibe to going to the footy in Perth and Adelaide than there is in a lot of other cities. And yeah, part of that is excellent, and I was lucky enough to grow up there, and it's this unbelievable atmosphere that can't be created anywhere else. But fans in those cities aren't necessarily used to sharing the stands with supporters of other teams. Whereas in Melbourne, for example, you go to the footy every weekend and you have to, you will sit with supporters of
Freudian slip
of other clubs. And so you're used to, sharing the aisles with them and everything else. Whereas when you often, go to an Eagles or Dockers game or the Power or the Crows and stuff, it is us versus them. Yeah. It's this pack mentality, and it's...
Certainly felt that as a player.
In certain parts, there's a real edge to it. And I know, I was an Essendon fan, still am. Again, another Freudian slip. I'm having a bad day.
They come in threes, these.
You know what I mean, though. So, as a young kid, I'm going to watch the Bombers play sitting in amongst all the Eagles and Freo fans or whatever and stuff. And it's a hostile, it's a different environment.
Yeah.
I know Mark Duffield from, who was the former chief footy writer at the West, he always put forward the proposal that for a derby or for the derbies every year, they should alternate the blocks. So say, one is the odd numbers on your membership card. And so, Fremantle block, West Coast block, Fremantle block, West Coast block, which would be cool. And then
how they do the grand final, isn't it?
Yes. And it would create a great, a great visual, but it would also get fans into the habit of, hey, we're sharing the experience of the footy. So support your team, go as hard as you want, create a great atmosphere, but be respectful of other people around you as much as you can.
Mm.
Just a thought bubble. All right, still on the agenda setters last night. Tom Morris opened up the program with this last night.
In recent days, Geelong has made an unexpected play for former Essendon captain Zach Merritt. Now, this comes via their coach, Chris Scott, who I understand texted Zach Merritt directly to say that he's one of Geelong's targets at the end of the season, alongside Zach Butters. Now, we know that Merritt has another year remaining on his contract. It's unclear whether Merritt would even consider the Cats. My belief, Caro, is that Merritt is all chips in on the Hawks. But what it does do, it speaks to the Cats' ambition that they are willing to potentially have a crack at Merritt, also Butters, and also Toby Green at the end of the season.
Is it one of all three or all three of them? No, I think they think they have the capacity to get all three of those players.
I think they have the capacity to get all three. I think they are highly unlikely to get Merritt. I think they're a chance to get Butters, and I think they're very likely to get Toby Green.
How unusual is that for a club coach to reach out direct? Surely they must have had some indication that he'd be open to considering a move to a club like Geelong.
No, the only indication clubs have is that he's open to considering a move elsewhere. And you know what? I think, Caro, you may as well have a crack. You never know what you're going to get.
If you're Chris Scott or any sort of leading coach with a big reputation, then of course you're going to text someone directly. I mean, no one's going to be upset to get that text, are they?
If that happened, that's just being professional. But on the other side of that, would you be a bit... The fact that that has leaked in that detail, would you be a bit buyer beware on that if you were the coach?
If you were the coach, yeah, I think you would.
They did work together for the Victorian team as well early in the season, so they do have a relationship.
Hutchie did go on to say that...
State of origin effect.
Yes. That was where my mind...
State of origin effect.
First went. Imagine every other club going, see, this is why we don't want our players going to participate as part of that.
It's not a cold call then.
Yeah. Hutchie did go on more explicitly later in that to essentially say, surely that the text message wouldn't come from the Chris Scott side, so it's a bit concerning. Has it leaked from the other side that, why these things are getting out? Worth keeping in mind, too, that Chris Scott is managed by Bravo Entertainment, which again comes under the umbrella of the Craig Hutchison empire.
Footy is a big industry
and
a small community.
Yeah.
Said it before and I'll say it again. We're just seeing the tip of the iceberg there, aren't we?
Yeah.
Really.
Is there much in it? What do you reckon about Zach Merritt to the Cats?
Anything's possible. Yep. Anything's possible with Zach. I think it seems like it's pretty clear that he wants out.
The Cats are all about getting the right guy for the right price, aren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, they back themselves in to get the best out of their players. It's not, you know, how easy would it be for Zach to get to Hawthorn? Is it easier for him to get to Geelong? I'm not too sure.
Mm.
Could be insurance.
Yep.
I don't know. Priority of Butters over Merritt? Not too sure. Well, you'd think so.
Are you worried about the Cats? Lost five of their last six. Jeremy Cameron now on the shelf for at least, what, four weeks?
Yep, I am.
It's a fascinating game.
I mean, that's...
So Thursday night against the Saints.
Massive out. Yep. Massive out.
And then their run home. So if you look at the Cats from here, so St Kilda, Cadinia Park, they got two big games, round 20, round 21. So Friday night against Melbourne at the G.
Ooh.
That would be good fun, given how well the D's play that ground. Collingwood after that, who are always going to be a bit of a tough out. And then they should win their last three. So Essendon at Cadinia Park, North Melbourne at Docklands, Richmond at Cadinia Park.
Yeah, okay. So they finished with a bit of a flurry.
Yeah. And this is what Chris Scott's been leaning on this a lot during the year in his analysis. So like they were, I think they're one win in front of North Melbourne. And yet he talks a lot about, you know, the teams you play twice and when you play them. So I don't think they've had a look at Essendon or Richmond yet, and yet they get them in two of their last three games. So, you know, you compare that to, for example, North Melbourne's won eight, Geelong's won nine, but four of North Melbourne's eight wins are Essendon and Richmond. So it's like, well, yeah, it completely
the latter, which I think Chris Scott did say last night, the latter is it's a tough follow these days. How long Cameron out for? What's the sort of...
They said 4 to 6. Yeah.
Jeez, that's being...
AC joint surgery.
That's being pretty generous.
Yeah. It's the same with the... I don't know if you saw the latest on the Butters
one. 4 to 6?
Yeah.
So they're syndesmosis?
They're saying a similar thing. They reckon they won't know a lot more until they do the surgery, and then they'll discover from there. But essentially they're
saying...
Can't
imagine we'll see him again.
They're saying 30 to 36 days is the general recovery time from this kind of surgery, which is booked in for the coming days in Melbourne. So it's either tomorrow or Friday.
So
they said
still
later
hasn't happened. Yep. So that's...
And then if you fast forward to the Saturday of the penultimate round, the last two rounds are currently floating. They haven't worked out who plays on what days. That will be 33 days from surgery if he has it tomorrow.
He'd be stunned if he's played again this year.
Yeah, and that the second last game is probably the one he wants to play. I mean, again, we're connecting dots here, but that's the game at home, and then they're on the road the last round up against Essendon. So you think you do all that effort for rehab and rush back, and essentially you play on the road. You're not in front of your home fans anyway. And how much does he want to do that? What's his motivating factor? I mean, you know what he's
can't,
like.
I can't really be sold on any scenario. Oh, he's staying. He'll want to get back and play. Oh, he's going. He'll want to get back and play. Like,
yeah. Why the rush?
Much, yeah, there's not much in it.
It looked bad too. Like, he looked in so much pain on the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not a minor one.
We don't usually do this, but Seven News last night, the chief footy reporter of at Channel 7 dropped a little bit of news relating to James Hurd and Essendon. Obviously, his name's so interconnected with the Essendon coach search at the moment. So I thought, you know what? Let's check in on the news services on a Tuesday. This is what Mitch Cleary had to say last night.
The Bombers champion will officially sit down with Essendon power brokers this week, but he's already sounding out who he wants to pitch to the club to be part of his coaching dream team. Hurd has approached ex-Melbourne coach and his former Essendon assistant, Simon Goodwin, about a return to the club. The pair spent 3 years together in Hurd's first stint, Goodwin stepping up to replace him for the last game of 2013. But Goodwin knocked back the approach just as he did the offer to apply for the top job, deciding to stay in Sydney as assistant. Dyson Heppel is one name to watch, having played under Hurd and currently at Collingwood. Hurd admitting he'd only start approaching people for his coaching panel if he thought he was a genuine chance.
Do you have people that you are bringing with you?
Team Hurd, what, my mum, my cat, you know, that's the team at the moment. But look, you can't at this stage, because you've no idea whether you're going to get the job or not. I've got people who I'd love to work with. I've got people who I've got in mind. But until you have some idea whether you're anywhere near getting the job, I think it would be wrong to sort of reach out to people and ask them, because how do they know?
The quote's fascinating in retrospect. So that's what James Hurd had said previously on Channel 9, and then the new news that James Hurd has, in fact, been ringing around, and he's at least rung Simon Goodwin. So
if the whispers are more than whispers, they're more than the rumblings of the jungle drums and any other metaphor you want to use, it's an aggressive push outside of that process to put a team that would persuade the Essendon Footy Club to put him in the chair.
I spoke a little bit about this yesterday. I feel like the conventional wisdom, you sort of put your finger in the wind, as I like to say, it feels like that the Hurd push is growing or gathering support, and it's almost this you know, helplessness that, oh, things are so bad. It can only be James Hurd. We heard the way Matthew Lloyd spoke about it last week.
The only hope.
I actually feel like what's happening on field at the moment actually counts against James Hurd. So,
explain that to me.
So, because a lot of people feel like, you know, Hurd's thing is he's this great uniter and he's, you know, passion for the club and there's no one like him. It was always put to me that, you know, as great as James Hurd was, and, you know, he's a popular figure, smart guy and everything else, but he was more the Wayne Carey of the team, you know, mm-hmm. for the North Melbourne Glory years comparison. And the Glenn Archer figure that was the heart and soul shinbone and everything was Dean Solomon.
Yeah.
So by that theory, you could not find anyone that is more passionate that unites the place more than Dean Solomon. He was the one that sent the letter to all the past players saying, now it's time to get together. He's come off the board to coach. His family's living in northern New South Wales. This guy bleeds red and black. He loves the club. Yeah. So if you're making the case for James Hurd around he's passionate
uniting.
For it, that's not the approach. What we are seeing on field at the moment is that in modern sport, you need more than just passion for the jumper and the logo and everything else. That what they need is the best possible coach. And so if I was on the Essendon selection committee, I'd be thinking, you know, I'm not ruling out James Hurd, and if he wants to run in the process, good luck to him and everything else. But it needs to be more than the passion piece, because we're getting a look at the passion piece right now, and it's not going up and to the right. It's on the way down.
So here at the ABC, we talk a lot about, you know, politics, and we talk a lot about sports. So if it's okay for everyone else to change their minds, I'm finding myself drifting to it not being Solomon and Hurd this week.
Hey,
that's where I'm drifting to at the moment.
Welcome aboard.
Thanks, and so. Experienced coach,
yep.
Someone who can galvanise a group and a supporter base with passion. Yep. Ken Hinckley, I think, is a good fit. Yep. I just feel that's where I think it might land.
Okay.
But I'm in the dark looking for the light switch.
Yep.
With Essendon at the moment.
Yeah, and that would rely a little bit on.
Hopefully, they're not.
On the devil's going in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which feels like John Longmire's coming with a rush there in that process. It's an interesting watch. They're meeting with they're having their initial meetings with prospective coaches this week and next week. So
sorry, just because Nathan Buckley is a mutual fascination for you and I. What happens if he misses out at Tassie?
Mm.
And does he stay on at Geelong?
Well. The reports are. That's a good question. It's a good question. I don't know what happens there. I haven't asked him.
No.
Yeah, but I don't. Judging by the reports, Essendon approached him saying, "Hey, do you want to have an initial coffee and get together?" And he said, "No, I'm good."
Reports James Kelly is.
Yep.
Out of the.
Well, he's basically
he's not
said,
keen on the Essendon job.
I think he has essentially said he finds it hard to. You know, if there's two jobs, it's kind of like, it feels like he's probably going on two dates. So he thinks if there's one I'm leaning into a little bit more, it's the Carlton.
Even that's
one.
Interesting. Like he's already coached at Essendon as an assistant.
Yeah.
He had a short stint there.
Yep.
It's a troubled club.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a shock little anecdote for you.
Yep. That was pretty grim the other day too when I got home, I did the Melbourne-Richmond game as you did and got home, put the TV on and three-quarter time they kicked one goal, 90 points down. And thank goodness they saved a tiny little bit of face with a seven-goal final term. All right, last one. Have you caught up with the Sam McClure-Adam Simpson beef media wars?
Do you know what? I haven't.
Right.
This is fresh for me.
This is good. You'll be able to. I think the idea is here we're going to play the first grab, which is essentially along the lines of what happened on 3RW, what Sam said, what Adam Simpson said, and then following that as to how Sam responded to Adam Simpson's response last night. So
okay.
McClure, Simpson, McClure.
Gotcha.
Across 3RW, SEN, and then last night on Channel 9 on Footy Classified. So see if you can keep up on the way through with all this.
And Carlton won't say this publicly, and I don't expect them to, but it's very clear to me speaking to people in and around the club. If they beat Hawthorn tomorrow night and then they beat Collingwood next Saturday night, I think Josh Fraser would put himself in the box seat for that job. He would be conducting the interview without having to do it on paper, essentially. Yep. If he doesn't, I'd still have Corey Enright as the hot favourite for the Carlton job.
Rod, I'm really pleased about this process so far from a Carlton point of view. Is nothing's got out. And something might get out at some stages. The more you talk to, the more that gets revealed. But none of that was true. When someone's just not right, and they don't listen. They go, well, that's not what I've been told. And you go, I can't tell you anymore how wrong you are. And they just go down swinging. It's just made up. Like, whatever, whoever told him, well, whoever told him didn't get it from the right sources. There you go. How's that sound? All right. The sources probably doesn't reflect reality.
I was asked a direct question on radio as to where I thought the process sat, and I offered up my opinion as to where I thought it would be. Now, Adam's employed by the Carlton Football Club, is he not? So, that, like, I'm comfortable with that. He's entitled to his view. I'm entitled to mine. I don't feel the need to suddenly defend myself or get involved in some sort of fracas that's not worth the effort. So on the bit at the start, I'm so pleased that nothing had got out. Like, without going back over old ground, this is the same football club that offered a sitting coach of an opposition club Michael Voss's job when he had 18 months on his contract.
And you reported that on this show last year.
We told you that here, and Carlton denied that and lied about it. This is the same club that met with Jamie Graham of the Fremantle Dockers during Gather Round. Now,
this year,
all parties would deny that. I know that they were staying at the same hotel, so there's plausible deniability to talk about the coaching position, why Michael Voss was still coach. So I think let's just pull the reins a little bit on Carlton being the beacon of morality when it comes to this sort of stuff. But Adam is entitled to his opinion. Like, he's involved in the process. I'm a journalist that's making phone calls. Both things can be right. Like, they're not mutually exclusive.
Feel like a 9-8 round to McClure. God, I feel like, look,
there's a good comeback or not.
I just thought it was pretty solid. Look, yeah. We don't know. Yeah. But I feel like we judge Sam pretty harsh on AFL Daily on a Tuesday.
I've given
him a couple of L's over the journey. I'll tell him to his face. But I'm just like, I don't know about that one, Sam. Not sure if his heart's in that one entirely. I felt like he had a 9-8 round.
He did. I thought at the start he started off very much along the lines of, I don't want to get dragged into this thing. You know, his opinion.
He came home strong.
Then he thought, you know what, actually, just one more thing on Carlton before we go. And he thought he had a few balls
like
in the chamber.
He landed a couple if we stick to the... landed a couple as the bell went.
You know what they say in boxing? You can swing the judges late. It's all about what you do in the last 30 seconds of the round. And he came on strong in those last 30 seconds.
I feel like I just feel like maybe got over the line.
Yeah. What do you make of the Jamie Graham bit about meeting with the Blues and stayed at the same hotel and while Michael Voss was still in the chair? And is there anything in that?
Well, Gather Round is the convention of footy.
Correct.
Jamie Graham's up to, you know, he's really highly regarded. That would make a lot of sense to me.
Mm.
We talk to a lot of people. You don't hear it in their voice. I feel like Sam, he knew that.
It landed?
Landed for me.
You mean the Jamie Graham bit. I thought you meant just the overall.
No. There was parts where it jumps in and out.
Like he didn't stutter. Like he knew.
I'm loving this part of the conversation. Don't you think you feel like you can hear it at certain times?
Yeah.
Where you're like, yep, that's
Adam Simpson. Solid. There was a little bit of the old West Coast Eagles Adam Simpson and all of that too, where he was like, righto. He's like, I'm up here and I'm going to take an absolute shot because I know that I'm right, that that's not the case, and so I'm going to swat away. Sam did a good job too. As we sometimes do in the press, the blurred lines between opinion and news, and he was pretty quick to say, hey, this was just my opinion. This wasn't necessarily news, and he got out of it. He was in the pocket, ducking and weaving, slipped out of it.
I like this. I like this boxing terminology we've slipped into.
Nah, we always love a little bit of a media storm, and we got one last night. All right, that's us done on ABC AFL Daily. No shortage of talking points in round 18.
No salad, no veggies,
none.
Just all meat on a Monday night. Meat lovers Monday.
Have a great week, Bob. Appreciate your time as always. Anything else you want to drop in there before we go? Any other hot takes from the weekend? Usual umpiring and happy with the Dogs. Professional win.
Happy to be a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Got the win.
Yeah.
Got the win. Loved watching the D's up close again.
Yeah. Just 9-0. First team to win their first 9 games in a season at the MCG since Richmond of 2018.
I just love the way they played their style in wet, greasy conditions.
Yeah.
They play with a bravery.
Yeah.
Reminds me of a young Brisbane Lions Chris Fagan team.
Wow. Can they win it?
Whew. Hadn't even considered that until this week of whether, are they an actual contender?
Yeah.
Like, huh. Well, they're not really rushing for the line at the moment. Frio are like, we're the real deal.
Mm. Who's the second best team in it?
I think Sydney are the second best team in it.
Okay. I think Brisbane. which might.
Oh yeah, well that's a pretty
I don't know. I'm a bit slow on the Swans, and maybe I judge them a little harshly, given that they're 1-4 against what I deem the other contenders. So Fremantle, Hawthorne, Brisbane, and Geelong. And Geelong are sliding. Yeah.
This is the thing, you can talk yourself in and out of who's second.
Yep.
So, jeez, not quite. But they're pretty good.
Do you know who I reckon is barracking for Sydney? Fremantle.
Yes.
Like if they finish top two, Freo will be thinking, hey, good luck, boys. We'll see you at the MCG at the end of September. If you guys take care of your finals, we'll take care of ours. That's a perfect matchup for Fremantle.
The negative pressure in that grand final is more on Sydney than, I better break the drought.
Yep.
It's more on Sydney, like, don't do it again.
Yep. Whereas almost any other matchup, like if Freo find themselves against the Lions, Hawthorne, the Hawks, the Cats, it's all of a sudden Freo's like, whoa.
We're the team
playing for history.
We're playing in a hyperbaric chamber here.
Yeah. And the other team's playing Freo because they're used. Do you know what they are? They're mountain climbers, the other teams.
They're mountain climbers.
And Freo are astronauts.
Astronauts.
I quoted you last night on that too. Have a good week, Bob.
You too, mate.
That's us done here on ABC AFL Daily. We'll catch you on Thursday for a full look ahead to round 19.